all of them too.
Excuse me.
Okay. Heading towards the end of the agenda. We're on number 9, regional listing, delisting of wolves. This was a, in response to a commission blue sheet request. This is a briefing. Our assistant director, Nate Pamplin, has put together some thoughts. And for the purposes of this presentation, it is much better if we hold our questions till...
It doesn't sound like you're talking to the mic.
You don't hear me? Okay. Is that better? Okay. For the purpose of this presentation, I'm going to ask the commission to hold your questions to the end because this presentation involves a number of logical steps that we need to hear about in whole so that you have a picture. So we're going to ask you to withhold your questions till the end. Okay. Welcome.
Well, thanks, Madam Chair, members of the Commission, and Director Anderson. Good afternoon. My name is Nate Pamplin. I'm the Assistant Director for the Wildlife Program. And today I'm presenting an analysis that was requested on a blue sheet that was submitted at Moses Lake last month. And the specific request was for the department to provide an analysis of the T&E WAC, that is the Threatened and Endangered Species WAC, changes that would be needed for the commission to consider regional listing and delisting of wolves. To present this analysis, I first wanted to just touch on the legal status of wolves in Washington, do a fairly quick review of the statutory and WACs that we currently have on the books. Then I'll walk us through three options to allow regional listing and delisting and identify some of the factors to consider as you deliberate next steps. Wolves were federally listed in 1974 under the Endangered Species Act. The department had listed wolves as endangered in 1980 and want to bring to your attention that the listed entity is the species, Canis lupus. So as we go forward and look at some of the different options, that might be more, that will become more relevant as we go on. Under the current status under the federal ESA is wolves are delisted in the eastern portion of the state. This was done in a budget rider this past spring that Congress passed, essentially telling the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to reissue their delisting rule for the Northern Rocky Mountain States DPS. Wolves remain federally endangered in the western two-thirds of the state. Under our state WAC, wolves continue to be listed as endangered throughout the state. In the Wolf Conservation and Management Plan that was adopted in December, we identified three recovery regions. Just bring to your attention, this line that separates eastern Washington is the same line of the federal boundary. So, and for the rest of the presentation, when I'm talking about and interpreting and for this analysis of the regional delisting of wolves, I'm interpreting that, making the assumption that we're talking about eastern Washington. So moving on to statutory and WAC overview. The primary RCW, the state statute, is 7712020, and that provides the authority to classify wildlife. And then there are three WACs that we'll go through. And then there's also a policy, a department policy that tracks the candidate species, those that might warrant further review, a further status review, and end up on the list. 7712020 is provides the guidance to the department, but this is it. It is that the director may recommend to the commission that a species of wildlife should not be hunted or fished, therefore designate the species as protected, or if the species is threatened with extinction, the department can classify a species as endangered. Our current threatened and endangered species WAC 232-12-097 was developed in 1989 with a large stakeholder process. The commission adopted this WAC in 1990. And as we consider all the different controversial threatened and endangered species decisions, this WAC has primarily been intact for 22 years. It was constructed with a lot of stakeholder input. I've just put on the screen here the list of the organizations that were engaged 22 years ago on helping construct the WAC that currently guides the department's T&E management. You'll note there's industry, counties, a tribal government, federal agencies, a variety of other state agencies, logging industry, Cattlemen's Association, Dairy Federation, et cetera. So I will orient you to a few key components of the WAC, and I don't know if folks have brought with you the Wolf Conservation and Management Plan, but this WAC is Appendix A, just if you want to try to track along. The purpose of this WAC is to identify and classify native wildlife that need protection, to ensure their survival as free-ranging populations in Washington, to define the process by which listing, management, recovery, and delisting can be achieved, and to ensure that the department uses consistent procedures and criteria for classifying wildlife. Section 2 of this WAC has a list of definitions. I want to bring two to your attention. One is species, which is any group of animals classified as a species or subspecies is commonly accepted by the scientific community. So the listed entities available to us in the current WAC is to species or subspecies. And then also there's a term that's used throughout the WAC, the significant portion of its range, and that is referring to the portion of a species range likely to be essential to the long-term survival of the population in Washington. The WAC then goes through in detail, section by section, the procedures for listing a species, elements of a recovery plan. The department then needs to implement that recovery plan and monitor progress of that population, ultimately achieving the recovery objectives, and then it outlines procedures for downlisting or delisting the species. I'm going to jump past some of the listing criteria and just focus on the delisting side of the equation. Currently in the WAC, we are to delist solely on the biological status of the species being considered based on the preponderance of scientific data available. And we only delist when a population no longer is in danger of failing, declining, or no longer vulnerable, that the recovery plan goals have been met, and that species no longer meets the definitions of endangered, threatened, or sensitive. Reflecting back over the past year, we provided a comprehensive overview of threatened and endangered species management back in June of 2011. We talked about it quite a bit as we went through the adoption of the Wolf Conservation and Management Plan. And in the November presentation, I had this slide, which is just a real quick summary of that delisting and downlisting process. So wanted to bring it to your attention again here. The process in general takes about 1 to 1.5 years, depending on the complexity and peer public input that's involved. And this would be true whether we're talking about delisting a species, a subspecies, or ultimately a recovery region. This is the type of effort that it would be once we trigger a delisting process. That process would be initiated. It could be done by the commission directing the department. It could be department initiated, or it could be in response to a petition that we receive from the public. We would notify the public that we're about to initiate a delisting process. ask for all available scientific information. We'd have information ourselves, but let's ask the public to start submitting information relative to the management and status of this species in question. Staff would develop a draft status report, submit it through internal and scientific peer review, and that's usually around 6 to 9 months. We're then required to go for public review. The asterisk indicates a required time step that's in WAC. That would be out for 3 months. We then prepare a final status report and conduct SEPA. Typically on a lot of other species, we might get by with just a SEPA checklist or perhaps an environmental assessment. For wolves, for the rest of the presentation, I'll be talking about environmental impact statements, just given the controversial nature of wolf management, and to essentially attempt to remove an APA challenge because we didn't follow a right SEPA practice. Just let's take that away and just keep everything at the EIS level. We would then do the public review of the final status report and the EIS, and then we take this recommendation to the commission, and that's usually a two-action step, first a briefing, and then a month later, a rule action. So I'll now move on to the options to allow regional listing and delisting that we've been able to come up with. The first option is to amend our threatened and endangered species WAC. And within that broad option, I'll identify four sub-options. And this is where we'll start, kind of feels like we're building out a step, and I'll talk about how that goes forward, and we'll probably build another step from there. But we could, in order to delist or list wolves on a regional basis, is essentially amend the WAC to allow regional listing and delisting for all species. Another way would be to just limit this to large carnivores, and then we could go very narrow and just allow an exception for regional listing and delisting for just gray wolves. Another option is to simply exempt wolves from this WAC. Wolves aren't a species that the commission considers as endangered, threatened, or sensitive. Mechanically, for those first three options, because there's so many sections of the WAC, it's not something where I can just say, well, we just add this phrase in this one section and that achieves that result. I'd have to go back through and do a little bit more analysis of all the sections that we would need to modify within the WAC. But just wanted to call to your attention that there are several. It's not just one spot. It would be on the listing criteria, the listing process, the delisting criteria, the delisting process, as well as we'd want to look at some new terms. If we're going to manage on a regional basis, we should define what region is, or the word regional. That could be tricky. We need to consider the biological significance of a regional unit. Is it a standalone unit in terms of population dynamics, or is it just a geographic area and we're not concerned about connectivity and reproductive isolation with surrounding regions? So a few factors to consider if we were to amend this WAC according to those four possible ways. One is that just by amending this WAC, I would anticipate that that action alone would require an environmental impact statement. This is going to require a pretty significant public process with scoping meetings and public hearings. This rule, looking at what it was like 22 years ago, involved a lot of people, a tremendous amount of time, and now we're in today's legal environment. And so I'd probably be looking at an environmental impact statement, looking at probably a year to 2 years to amend this WAC, an EIS costing somewhere in the order of $150,000. I think it's important to consider the precedents for other species. For instance, if you take the avenue of allowing for regional listing, a delisting of large carnivores, or for all species in wildlife, what does that mean for how we manage wildlife within the state? What does that mean in terms of future petitions for us to consider on a regional basis, how that separates us from normally the biological entity of a species, subspecies. For instance, if an interested entity wanted to petition the department to list marine mammal species by stocks, for instance, and then we're looking at potential biological removal for fisheries interactions on a variety of smaller stocks rather than a coast-wide or a Puget Sound coast-wide population. So there's some pretty important ramifications anytime we start thinking about lumping and splitting species, biologically as well as legal and social. There's some legal considerations that I would encourage you to have on your mind. We need to have to build a basis, and if it's not a scientific basis for this decision, we'll still need to be able to explain how the action wasn't arbitrary. And again, this is just referring to amending this WAC. And then if we look at the scope of the WAC change, the more narrow it is, the more likely we will be in terms of in a vulnerable position. So if it's just limited to wolves, we're going to have to explain why was wolves so significant that it warranted this WAC change versus if we did it for all species. And then that brings us up to the second point, though, is what's that precedence for all other species? We might have a more robust legal position, but it might open us up to other problems by making it very broad. We could also, once the WAC is amended, we're now able to go forward on delisting on a regional basis. That then brings us into what does it mean for the management of wolves. We would likely need to, at minimum, modify the recovery plan. We may need to draft a second plan, or depending on how, and this is where it gets kind of several steps built onto each other, or it could be that we have to develop two new recovery plans. If we're able to just modify the recovery plan, we'd be looking at a supplemental EIS. But if we're doing a second plan or two new plans, then we're talking about a new EIS or EISs. And then ultimately, we may be looking at two delisting processes. We might be going forward with a process that I described earlier that takes about a year, year and a half, doing that just for Eastern Washington, and then at some point doing the balance of the state. And those processes, as I mentioned before, would also be done in an EIS. As we consider the implications for a recovery plan and the delisting processes, it's important to consider the application of a significant portion of the range. Currently, the recovery objectives within the plan look at having a minimum of 4 successful breeding pairs within each recovery region, as well as 3 of the unassigned packs for a minimum of 15, or if we're at 18 in 1 year, we could delist with 4 in each recovery region. Well, what does that mean if we're able to go forward and delist and we have a different management scenario in Eastern Washington and Western? The previous plan looked at persistence modeling and connectivity of having a similar management scheme across the state. If it changes, what does that mean for recovery in the other region? And then secondly, as we're talking about potentially modifications of the plan, the EIS is associated with modifying the plan. The delisting process, again, that's on a standalone track, but if we had to do it twice, there's some time and financial commitments there that I would hope that you would consider. Continuing on with some additional factors to consider if we're amending the T&E WAC is that it could present us in a difficult or an awkward spot with inconsistent messaging with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. Just last month, Director Anderson sent a letter to U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service Director Dan Ash concerning the ongoing distinct population segment review that the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is conducting for the Pacific Northwest DPS. In that letter, we had indicated that very concerned about that status review. Having wolves listed federally as endangered limits our ability and our flexibility on our own state plan. And so as they go about considering what to designate this population, our first priority would be that they just simply delist wolves because the wolves in the western two-thirds of the state are likely going to be recolonized by the delisted Northern Rocky Mountain DPS. But if they're not able to do that, then we'd want to look at perhaps a listing designation such as threatened, which allows the state to perhaps pursue a Section 4D rule under the Endangered Species Act, which is essentially exempt state management. Because we have a recovery plan on the books, we're demonstrating to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service that we have an adequate regulatory mechanism. And then finally, this would be true for whether it's status quo or the other three options that we're considering, and that is, how would we get to public hunting? One way is that we need to have a WAC change to list wolves if they're delisted as to a game species, where the commission could manage time, place, and manner. But we currently do not have any statutory authority to charge a fee for a wolf tag. That would be derived from going to the legislature. We'd need to have an RCW fix. And then lastly, we'd be looking at a post-delisting management plan. How that plays out on whether or not we would have two post-delisting management plans, one for a region that's delisted and one for the rest of the state, or if somehow we could couple those, obviously that's where I would be interested in, but it's dependent on a variety of other decisions made earlier and how the WAC is amended. Moving on to option number two, which is to create a separate threatened and endangered species WAC for wolves, a new WAC. We would, to mechanically get there, we'd recommend amending the existing T&E WAC to exempt wolves, and then creating a new T&E WAC that allows for regional listing and delisting of wolves. Again, we would, in the new WAC, need to define the terms region and region, and then the associated biological concerns I mentioned earlier. The existing WAC change and the new WAC change could probably be folded together into a single EIS. Need to consider the precedents for other species that we're creating a new WAC just for one species for T&E management. The legal consideration of how to avoid an arbitrary and capricious ruling. Similar scenarios of modifications to the recovery plan, considering the biological persistence and regional connectivity pieces on having two regions that might have two separate management schemes. I'd repeat the same considerations about the messaging with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and the post-delisting management for hunting. Moving on to option three is that the commission could list and delist gray wolves by a subspecies. Our current T&E WAC allows the commission to list by species and subspecies. The department currently has the listed entity as Canis lupus, the gray wolf, and the status of the subspecies designations is currently under review within the scientific community. Currently, it's recognized that Washington has one subspecies of gray wolf within its boundary. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is part of the more comprehensive review of the lower 48 states, had a contract with some scientists to review the scientific literature, and there's a draft manuscript, and I'll show a couple maps from that. So this map shows the current designations of subspecies and species of wolves across North America. Just to call your attention that Canis lupus occidentalis is through interior Alaska and down through Canada. Canis lupus nubilis is the subspecies within Washington and stretches across through the Great Plains. Because of some translocations in the 90s of occidentalis into central Idaho and Yellowstone, this then essentially extends the range of occidentalis into those states. Occidentalis is moving westward, so it could be that there is the potential of two subspecies within Washington, and this manuscript's going forward. We'll wait and see how the scientific community views that designation, and so this could lead us, the commission, into a future option of listing wolves by subspecies. The challenge, of course, is... and this is part of the argument that we're making to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, is that Washington will likely be in that that spot where the two subspecies are breeding, and so there's not necessarily a bright line in reproductive isolation, and that's been our point that we've been sharing with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. Is we already have two packs in central Washington that are showing that they're genetically integrated between Nubilis and Occidentalis. We likely will have, if you consider this a race of recolonization in Washington, we'll likely see more wolves moving westward out of Idaho, out of eastern Washington, into the currently federally listed portion of the state, long before we'll have wolves coming down from, for instance, Vancouver Island into the Olympics or down the backbone of the Cascades. So time will tell, but that's been our current our current position, our current perspective of how recolonization will occur. Some factors to consider for option number three is if the commission were to list wolves by two subspecies, we would then need to do a status review to provide that kind of scientific underpinning that says, yes, here we're in a spot to list wolves as two subspecies. But once, if that were to be done, now we're looking at a very different application of the term significant portion of its range. Significant portion of its range now refers to that portion of the range for eastern Washington and that significant portion of its range for the western two-thirds of the state. It also could change our thinking in terms of biological persistence. And just in a gross, oversimplified perspective, when you have a smaller geographic area and fewer individuals, we tend to be more conservative about where we're at in terms of recovery and management versus a species that's occupying a broad range. There's a lot of connectivity. If there's some management in one scenario, not too worried about it because there's broader connectivity to adjacent populations. If we're treating these as two separate management units, two separate subspecies, that becomes a more prevalent concern. We would likely need to do recovery plans and an EIS for each subspecies if under the status review, the commission were to designate either of the subspecies as endangered, threatened, or sensitive. I've already mentioned the consideration about the messaging to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, particularly at this stage in time. The legal considerations of managing by subspecies, and then here, the post-delisting management plan, because we're now treating these as two separate subspecies, would likely be independent management plans. So I'll pause there for.
So we held our questions. questions from the commission? Thank you, Nate. The way. Okay, I'll start off because I know there's, come on, people, wake up. This is important. I know there's questions out there, so I'll start off thinking about the options before us. It seems to me that you're right to think in terms of the possibility that we might want to follow the federal lead and look at that federal boundary as the definition of a region for our purposes. And if we took that path, seems to me that all we would have to do is, building on the SEPA document we generated for the overall delisting plan that we just adopted, add a analysis of the number of wolves that would be supported in the eastern segment that the federal government has already designated as delisted, and subtract that from the overall plan's objectives for delisting. Seems that is the formula that would be fairly simple to model and have a fairly quick route to two different recovery plans. So that's just one statement, that it seems like it's not too complicated since our, fortunately, our line on our recovery units tracked the federal line. If it didn't track it, it would be much more difficult to sort this out, given the plan we adopted. Secondly, so I don't see the modeling as being that difficult. If we can, I've seen models, by the way, in which the number of breeding pairs and the number of wolves that are supportable on, say, the Olympic Peninsula have been modeled. So we have those models. So that's one comment. And the inconsistent messaging point, given that presumably the wolves in the portion of the state that would be remain listed, western two-thirds, would be protected. They would remain listed. So all the protections that are currently in place would remain in place. I don't see the inconsistency there. All we would be doing is being consistent with the feds, seems. So I'm not sure how to understand that. Commissioner Jennings?
Thank you, Madam Chair. But I think your starting assumption is one that, to me, is a little weak, in that we start by saying, oh, we want to focus on the eastern region, and that nice boundary is there from the feds. But once we set up the process, when the North Cascades gets close, why would they not want to delist that region? I mean, I think it's an artificial distinction to say, oh, we're only going to do it for this one of our three regions and not the second region when it gets to some level of recovery in the third. So that whole sort of piece didn't really resonate with me. When I look at what we're trying to do, you know, first off, the commission as a whole has spoken. We said we want wolves to be a persistent part of our native fauna. We also have some sort of underlying, or not underlying, but additional objectives. And one is to keep the management in state hands. And in large part, that means keep it out of the courts. And what I see us, if we start going down this path, I would expect us to get legal challenges, and that would be tying us up in court. And it would be just the opposite of what we're trying to do, which is make sure that we can implement our plan aggressively. Second objective is we want to implement our existing wolf recovery plan aggressively. We want to put as many of our available resources to getting it right and dealing with the problems we've got now. And I see this effort taking a whole lot of both staff and fiscal resources away from our implementation of our current wolf plan. The third is we do have a very strong motivation to get the western two-thirds of the state delisted from endangered, from federally endangered to federally threatened. Anything we do along these lines makes it much, reduces the probability that the feds would feel comfortable taking the western two-thirds down from endangered. I think one of the biggest reasons we have going for them to go for it now is we have a statewide recovery plan that says we have a vision for how we're going to get there. If we start saying, oh, well, we're going to delist the eastern third and aggressively manage them and maybe move to hunting, that's really going to slow down the recovery or impede the recovery for the western two-thirds. And again, I think that would give the feds pause to say, is it really the right time to delist to state? And the fourth sort of underlying assumption is, as we heard this morning, we are so resource-strapped that we need to be doing everything we can to be very prudent with our resources, both staff resources and dollar resources, so that we can make sure we put enough resources into implementing the plan and be very responsive on the ground. So I see this whole approach of talking about regional delisting as interfering with most of the objectives we've set for ourselves dealing with wolves.
Thank you. Commissioner Caney?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think when I heard about asking for this paper, it seemed reasonable to ask the question. And I think that's a very important thing, is that we've asked the question, and the public, I think, especially in an area where there are wolves, can probably appreciate that, at least we're looking into the process. But I wonder if it's even necessary, to be honest, because in 2009, we had one documented wolf pack in the state. There was probably more wolves than that, but that was what was known at the time. Now in 2012, there's five known packs, there's five maybe packs, and there's two to three on the Colville Reservation, and that's not counting further south where we don't know exactly how far they've spread. So as many as 13 packs could exist in the state already, but we haven't documented them all, and that's an important part of the wolf plan, is to see that they're documented and that they're breeding pairs. So by a year and a half from now, the time it would take to maybe do some of this action, we could easily be at 17, 18 packs. So to me, it's more a question of those folks that are now experiencing larger numbers of wolves than the rest of the state, can feel that they're bearing this whole burden, whether it's ranchers or hunters or, just having it all there in their community now. I just feel that that's maybe where we need to focus on, is to assisting those particular regions where wolves have started to recover. And it seems like the Department of Wildlife is doing that with their efforts and their outreach and getting out and, almost at a point where, where there could be a legitimate permit issued. So I guess I'm beginning to wonder, after I heard your presentation, is it worth the legal challenges? Is it worth the effort, the time, the dollars, the staff, if wolves are moving along fairly well? But at the same time, there's those folks where they're feeling very much like they're shouldering the burden that we would have to focus on if you didn't go this route. One other suggestion that has popped up a lot in people that I've talked with about this is, well, why don't you just drop the three-year waiting period after 15 breeding pairs is reached? And I probably think once you reach 15, it won't be that much longer before you reach 18, so you'd be at that magical number as well. But that's something else that might be looked at, just to give some confidence to people that as wolves grow faster than we expected, that we're looking at different issues. So thank you.
Thank you. Commissioner Duvia?
Thanks, Madam Chair. I got several comments here I'd like to kind of express and share. First of all, the one thing that I have learned over the last 5 years of talking to Montana, Idaho, and Wyoming people is you have to be proactive and try to stay ahead of the rapid growth of wolves. Recovery has not ever been a problem. It's control is the only issue. And if we had learned anything from them, they had recovery in 2002, never got into real management until 2012, and had significant devastation to a number of economic issues in their state. So the process that I did in my blue sheet, and what I think that's important for us as a group to do, is that the tremendous lead time that was pointed out to get these steps done necessitate us not beginning after we reached the milestone, but be prepared to implement it as soon as we reach a milestone. So a lot of those steps, I think, can be done simultaneously. We should be looking at that. I think the regional concept has already been expressed and implemented and thought about by the federal government. So I think there's some basis for us to be there. The legal suits are here. In the past, in Wyoming, in Montana, Idaho, the environment groups sued us as we tried to delist. And that's still as strong probably as ever. We don't know. Our plan seems to be going along pretty well. But in our case, we now have the other side of the wolf impacting people aware of what's the damages that are in front of them, and they're going to be the ones filing the lawsuits. And that's the coaching and learning curve that they've been on. The cattle people, the hunters, the communities, the counties that are devastated economically by an overabundance in certain areas of the predators has got them visiting with their legal counsel now. So unfortunately for us, we're going to have lawsuits from both sides more likely than just the one side, as the other states have suffered. So I think if we continue to be proactive in looking for solutions, and as Commissioner Keeney pointed out, we probably already have in excess of 10 PACs. We probably have 50 to 100 wolves in Northeast Washington. We're going into the breeding season. We'll probably have 75 to 150 wolves in Northeast Washington by June. And that impact alone is about 4,000 ungulates. That's about $7 million worth of revenue to the state if we have to take it out of the hunting side. We're currently spending in excess of $500,000 to manage these wolves. It's probably going to go closer to $1 million as we get further along the line. So if we can get off this management plan sooner, we can save millions of dollars. If we try to stretch it out, like a lot of the environmentalists want us to do, defer, delay as long as we can, because the wolf keeps eating and multiplying every day. And so anything they can to stretch out the recovery cycle is one of their goals, and it's been in Idaho, Montana. And the outcome of that's been devastating. So I think the process of finding our alternatives and trying to shorten the cycle to get them delisted is financially prudent. I think it's economically beneficial to the citizens of the state. I think it's an obligation we have to make sure that we are spending our money wisely. If it costs us $300,000 to cut this process by a year and we save $1 million, could be helpful to us. So I don't know. I'm not saying delist wolves. I'm all for getting the wolves in the plan. I'm all for recovery. I think we have a natural barrier that I see is going to be difficult to get them to Western Washington. I'm afraid that we could have totally uncontrollable wolf packs in two of the regions, if not one of them, before we could get them delisted, unless we want to start saying we're going to translocate. So I think we got two choices to go down to. We've either got to be aggressive in translocating, and so we can get them under control and under management sooner, or we try to figure out how we can get to a better management phases on a regional basis. And I have no idea which is the best way to go, but I know that to be responsible, I need to start today to explore every place I can to figure out how we're going to do the most cost-effective way of managing as soon as possible. A lot of cattlemen in our area right now are financially threatened for survival. And if they double the impact next year, we will be in court. And they have no choice. And if we continue to deplete the ungulate populations in eastern Washington, there will be a lot of counties that will be in court asking for some help or protection. So I think we need to be prepared. I think we need to be ready to make changes sooner than later. And if we spend the time exploring all of our alternatives and keep working towards faster solutions, we can stall off conflict with our citizens, that we can come up with maybe better, quicker, more balanced approach to get wolves integrated with Washington. But currently, we are behind in Northeast Washington on the wolf plan already. And we're just a small little section up there. But I'm totally appalled at how fast they have multiplied and are everywhere. And I think it's going to be in Okanagan, Wenatchee next, the Blue Mountains next. The Cascades probably are a year away. But it's probably 5 years away before we get into the western region. And there's no way we can survive in eastern Washington for 5 years without all the tools we can possibly put together to manage wolves, and we'll have plenty of them. So that's my concern of why we should go through this. I'm still a bit surprised that we went through all the reasons why we can't get this done. There wasn't too many things in there how we can get it done.
Nate, you want to respond? And I think Director Anderson wants to say something.
I'd like to go first.
Okay. Director Anderson?
We were asked to do an analysis of what it would take to look at regional listing, delisting, and with obviously a focus on wolves. I went over this presentation and walked through this and discussed this with Nate at length. And we were, frankly, very careful not to put up pros and cons. We listed the things that we think you should consider as you make a decision about moving forward in whatever direction it is. The fact of the matter is that moving down this particular pathway and changing this WAC there's a lot of work associated with it. There's a lot of challenges associated with it. There's a lot of factors you need to consider. We're not here recommending that you do it or not do it. But what we are trying to do is respond to what was asked of us and give you the information that you need to make a wise decision, an informed decision about what next steps are. I appreciate that there's concern about, we're not showing you enough of the reasons why you should do it. That all we're doing is we're putting in front of you what the factors are, what the considerations are that we think you need to make. If we have missed something that should be on here, more than happy to hear what those are, can incorporate that in the analysis in your decision making. But this is our best attempt in working with the AG's office of looking at what's possible, what the factors are that we think you need to consider, that we had to do in about a 3-week time frame. And I'm fully aware, we're fully aware of the challenges that face different parts of the state, and in particular Northeast Washington. And frankly, that's where we're putting 90% of our efforts right now, of trying to work with the people that are impacted by having wolves on the landscape. And I attempted to go through this without getting into some of the details of the steps that we've taken to do that. One of the things that got Montana, Idaho, Wyoming into trouble is they got into court and they were handcuffed for a long time, 8 years, before they could do anything. We're not in that position. And I'm proud of that. And it's, I understand that it's precarious and that people can bring legal challenges upon us for any variety of reasons, and they may choose to do that, but and we will meet those challenges as they come. But just getting back to this is this. This is a response. This is our best effort to analyze the options and to put in front of you the factors that you would need to consider in a decision that you might make in terms of adding to, deviating from our current approach to dealing with wolves in the state.
Do you want to follow up?
Yeah, just a short.
Concise.
My comments were really, I'll have to apologize if you took them as they were not meant for staff or for you. Those were comments that I wanted to share with my fellow commissioners in terms of what our responsibilities are and how we should be looking at this thing. not maybe necessarily that we have to change it, but we have an obligation to explore all the alternatives, because this is probably, I think, the biggest problem that we have faced and probably will face, and economically as well as for our department employees and citizens of the state. So that's where I was coming from. And I can't begin to tell you how I see Steve out there. Every day Steve is on this. Every day I'm on it. Phil and Nate, we talk at least once or twice a week. We have meetings constantly trying to put things together. So it's not the department that's not trying to take behavior or take procedures and to take action, because we are in a lot of ways living the problem. But as a group, we have to come together, because this is going to eventually creep out and swallow the whole state piece by piece. So that's where I'm coming from, is that we need to stay ahead of this by as far as we can.
Okay. Commissioner Jennings.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Going back to some of your comments, Commissioner Duvia, you know, you talked about the fact that the three states to the east of us, you know, would have been happy to manage starting in 2002, but didn't really get a chance to until recently, and that was because it was tied up in court, but not because the state got sued, but because the feds got sued. If we go down this approach and the feds do what we hope they do and propose delisting to the threatened status, that to me I can see being sued by environmentalists if we're starting to not have a state plan in place. And that will really restrict our ability to deal with wolves in the western two-thirds of the state. I was a little... when you talked about the enviros trying to stretch out recovery, I don't see that happening in this state. That might be your perception of what happened in the other three states. I see the conservation community working very hard to get recovery happening sooner rather than later. They were the ones who have been pushing translocation. They're the ones who have tried to find resources to help us get them started. I think they want a recovered wolf population in our state sooner rather than later. I don't think they're trying to drag out recovery. What will delisting, regional delisting, give us? To me, what it gives us is really just hunting. We've given every single other management tool necessary in the arsenal, and I'll use the word arsenal, of a toolbox for the department and the private sector to use short of hunting with our current plan, even at the current time. So really what that's going to get us is just hunting. And it probably won't get us that if we get a legal challenge. You talk about the cattlemen going to court over this. My question is, what would the legal remedy do if they sued the state? Tie the plan up so we can't move forward? To me, you don't file a lawsuit unless you have a clear answer for what you want the courts to give you. And what would the cattlemen be asking for in a lawsuit? Because they can't ask for us to do more. It would be a procedural lawsuit pushing us to go back and redo the plan, which is going to take more time and is not going to meet their objectives. Your other point was you think it's going to take 5 years for them to get into Southwest Washington to get delisted. I push back and say the TNOA PAC's right on the border there, and it bred this year, and it was a successful breeding pair. So my sense is within about 2 years we're going to have wolves in the Southwest Washington region, and as soon as they get there, they're going to do really, really well. So I see 5 years is more like when we're going to have well more than five packs there. So again, I want to be on the same page with you about let's be successful, let's make sure we manage wolves properly, but this whole process of regional delisting to me seems to fly in the face of everything we're trying to accomplish. And the only thing we're going to get out of it, if we're successful, is hunting. So I don't really see the return on investment being that you were talking about, the millions of dollars saved. I'm not sure I understand where you're coming from on that.
Commissioner Perry had his hand up next.
Yeah, I'm not going to repeat a lot of stuff that has been said already, but I do have a lot of empathy for the private landowners and particularly cattle producers that in extreme eastern Washington that are kind of carrying the burden for this, and I think we ought to do everything possible to try to remedy that. I also appreciate the short term that you had to put on this presentation, and I learned quite a bit from listening to this, even though I thought I knew quite a bit about it to start with. I disagree that regional delisting wouldn't accomplish anything. I think it's been shown in several of the other states that have wolves that once they get to a certain level, it's almost impossible to reduce their numbers. I think both Idaho and Montana are having those problems right now, even in Idaho with the extreme number that were killed in this hunting season. They don't seem to have reduced the total number all that much. And I really would not like Washington to get into that situation. I'd like a sustainable wolf population, but I'd also like healthy, huntable ungulate populations. In certain places in Idaho, they are reaching the threshold where that may not be the case, at least for the ungulates. This regional delisting, I don't think, is such an original idea. The feds did that when they created the Northern Rocky Mountain, the DPS. They essentially did a regional listing and delisting right there, so that could be our model. Again, it doesn't seem like such a wild idea at all. Also, I don't think that a delisting where you would gain as was pointed out, only hunting. I don't think that will slow the delisting or the recovery process at all. Like I say, the experience that they've had in Idaho and Montana doesn't seem to have reduced the population. In Idaho, both hunting and trapping, they still seem to be maintaining their wolf population, and maybe it's even increasing, even under that kind of pressure. So, however, I do think that having some kind of a delisting process where we could get to hunting may, to some degree, protect livestock and private property interests in particularly eastern Washington. Nate talked about the complications of having various management plans for a single species in Washington, and I don't really quite agree with that. We've got different management plans for elk all over the state, different in the Blue Mountains than it is in Northeast and so forth. I don't think that's a very unique concept at all. We do that all the time, and it would seem to me if we were able to delist in one of our wolf regions, the listing would remain in the other two, and as the wolves migrated out, delisting process would occur across the state. And again, I don't see that as such a complicated process. It seemed to me like that could be covered in an EIS and so forth, pretty straightforward. There's already been a tremendous amount of work done on that to get to where we are, and I think a lot of that information could be used. It may not be quite so complicated. I guess I too want to see the current plan work, and I appreciate the department's efforts putting together a special carnivore section to try to implement that as soon as possible. But they're already having extreme problems in Northeast Washington, as Commissioner Duvier pointed out. And the sooner we can address that, the better. But I think we need as many tools as possible, and I think the regional delisting would be extremely helpful in that respect. And as Commissioner Keeney pointed out, if we delay on this a long time, maybe it won't be needed because we already have an 18 pair and we can start a delisting process, assuming that we have control of the whole state. So I think those things are something to think about also. and again, particularly the hardship that our wolves are putting on one group, our current delisting WAC doesn't allow us to do that at all. And on most endangered species, it's probably not necessary. But in terms of something like a wolf, it definitely is necessary. And again, we have models in other states that we need to look at really carefully and not let Washington get into the same situation. We need to stay out of court. We need to do this carefully. I totally agree with that, but we do need to get some kind of handle on this animal. Thank you.
Commissioner Schmitten.
Thank you, Chair. A couple points, and I hope my voice holds up for it. First, it is reasonable to ask the question of regional listing and delisting now. Frankly, that's our job. That's why I supported the blue sheet to begin with. Secondly, the threat of lawsuit, that's always there. You know, should we shy away from that? No, it makes me more determined. What we have to do is follow our WACs and listing. We have to involve the public. We have to go through CEPA. So, again, I think that the briefing certainly raised a multitude of levels of complexity. Length of time that this requires, the potential cost of staffing. But, you know, if you really think about it, why are we having this debate now? It's because the question was not being able to be put on the table or answered previously. Let's look back at that history for a second. And we started the Wolf Conservation Management Plan because the CEPA process and associated scientific reviews occurred after the Citizens Advisory Group had performed and given their draft. But before the commission was involved, several key issues were already defined and given to us without commission input. Two noteworthy issues were, number one, the number of breeding pairs needed. That was 15 for considered a recovery. We didn't touch that because it was given to us. Number two, and here we are today, the consideration of regional delisting process. We were never able to engage in that debate. It has lingered right till this day, and it still plagues us, and we need this healthy discussion. Perhaps the question I'm really asking is, should the commission be a part of the CEPA process by having the ability to make comments on the options? If we had that, we would have had this discussion. We would not be in the angst that we're having today.
Very good points. Commissioner Jennings?
Just a process question. Okay. So we've had the briefing. So what? Do we then, in a future commission meeting, propose a vote to direct the department to go down that path? Is that what we're setting ourselves up to do, to have a vote on this topic? Because we can't just have a conversation about it and then tell them to do what I would think.
Yeah. Let me address it, and then you can add, take a shot. My expectation is that we are coming into this meeting with a lot of open questions about what it would take, what complexities it would involve us in. So now we are better informed, but I don't think we didn't set this up so that we would make a decision today. We also have an executive session planned for a little later this afternoon so we can talk with our AG about potential litigation associated with any decision we might make in the future in regards to this subject. So I don't think there was any expectation that a decision would be made today regarding whether we are going to go down this road or not. But this was informational. Now that we've been somewhat informed, I think there's a lot more thinking that must be done. I see this as a rather momentous decision. So we need to mull it over a little bit, I think, before taking action. But I'm willing to hear from the rest of the commission regarding what your preferences are, because this would be an action of the full commission. I think Commissioner Perry was next.
Yeah, I just wanted to say something very similar to that, that I came here to learn what flexibility we had, and I think that was pointed out very well, and I would appreciate if we could have your notes, Nate, you know, mm-hmm. passed out to us. I tried to take a few notes, but you went over a lot of material. And I think the commission should have a lot more discussion. If it looks like we should make a decision on that, I think we should. But certainly not today.
Commissioner Caney?
Thank you, Chair Walker. I've been sitting here mulling about it a little bit, mulling it over. And some things that each commissioner has said make a lot of sense. And Commissioner Duvia's statement of, you know, one of the other options to consider translocation as a higher, at a higher level, I think is totally logical and something that should be on the table again, even though, you know, there's a lot of work that goes with that as well. But in my mind, the use of our time and the staff's time might be better spent. And this is, like, I agree with Commissioner Perry that we need a lot of discussion on this, but it might be better spent preparing for the inevitable reaching the 15 or 18 breeding pairs faster than we all thought. And I think Commissioner Duvia has said that very well, that they are a prolific species, and they're moving fast, and they're starting to spread. And if you're following any of the packs at all, it's amazing, you know. And I believe the Tianwei pack will be south of I-90 maybe by this summer, or already members from that pack. And so I think our time might be better spent preparing for the inevitable delisting of the whole state, you know. And there's a lot of work to go into that, and the management plan that comes after that. You know, but if we're over here working on regional delisting, all the while we should be getting ready for, you know, it's going to sneak up on us that they're here. They're already at that level of recovered that we've got to move on. I don't know. That's just my tentative thought. And I'm not against regional delisting. I feel it was a well done presentation that opened my eyes a little bit as to the ramifications and the time it would take and the years it would take. And it just made me really think that, you know, the time could be spent on some other things that might benefit us as a whole state, but not to ignore the folks that are bearing the burden now, as I don't think that the department is. So,
Commissioner Duvia?
Thanks, Chair. I didn't have no expectations of reaching a decision from this, but there, as Commissioner Schmidt mentioned, I think this aspect was one of those ones left in the dark hole that we had thoughts and questions but had not enough understanding. I think we took a giant step forward with what we need to do and what it involves and some of the issues to do that. At the same time, we need to be proactive. I keep saying that because, as you can see from this, it's not a 1 month or one quarter. It's probably a year process at minimum to move the ship to go a different direction. And you can't wait till you get to the problem before you start a year process. So if we can constantly see where we're headed, and as Commissioner Keating says, we're going to see a lot when we get a trapper in a field and they start collaring these animals, and we start to see really what we have out there, and then within months we'll see further migration. We can probably feel better about what is the right approach to do it. But in the meantime, I think as a group, we need to continue to move forward on all options, whether it's a regional, translocation, anything else we can think of, so that we have a clear understanding of what to do if certain things happen, so we don't start the wheel all over like we are right now with whether or not we should be regionally delisting. Because I think these particular issue is getting quickly out of hand if we don't kind of react to what they're doing, and they're not very predictable other than that they're going to eat and multiply. That's my concern. I think we should mull this over, talk amongst ourselves, and then decide what's appropriate.
Okay, and one more comment. And Director Anderson, do you want to say something? One more comment. I want to make it clear that all that we have talked about here is a process by which we would potentially, possibly, maybe change the WAC to allow regional delisting sometime in the future. We were never asking for a presentation on a process to initiate regional delisting now. This is because we are not allowed to do that, or that is our interpretation of the WACs, that the WACs prevent that. The WACs do not allow us to regionally delist. So all we were talking about is establishing a process by which, in the future, if we deem necessary, we could regionally delist. And during the time in between now and then, our management plan would be, our current recovery plan would not be rendered ineffective in any way. We would still be relying entirely on that recovery plan. So anything we would do in terms of changing the WAC would not directly affect the recovery plan. It would still remain in effect. That is my understanding, right? Okay. And I also wanted to agree with Commissioner Schmitten that part of the reason we're having this conversation at this stage in the game is because we were not able to have it 5 years ago before the development of the recovery plan. So it was never considered during that development of the recovery plan. It was just not deemed possible. So here we are having this conversation, and I didn't want anyone to be alarmed that what we're talking about here is initiating a regional delisting process at this moment in time. Commissioner Jennings?
And I guess that one, so I'm happy, you know, along with your comments of asking the question and learning more. But your statement about that this won't affect the recovery plan, to me, isn't accurate. And it isn't accurate because we have a limited number of resources in this department. And if we start having to put resources into this question and working on the WAC, it will be affecting our ability to implement the current recovery plan. And that's one of my big concerns about this process, not the philosophical part of it, but we want to make sure we can put as many resources as we can afford to on the ground now, and we only have a limited number of resources, and that will be pulling it away. So I strongly believe that if we go down this path, it will affect our recovery plan. So that's just
okay. And implementation of recovery,
of the plan.
Not the recovery plan itself.
Implementation.
Yeah, granted, possibly, but that would just be a question of how many resources do we have to apply? Do we want to put a priority on this? Is this that important? That's the question. Okay, Director Anderson.
I'll wait until the
Commissioner Carpenter.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm probably the least knowledgeable person on the commission regarding the Wolf's issue because I wasn't involved in the deliberations. What I learned today was a lot, and I think from my perspective what this was an opportunity to be prudent in understanding what our responsibilities are and what we need to look at on a regular basis as we go forward to be responsible on behalf of the resource, the management of the Wolves and the public. And I look at it as a step in doing what we're supposed to do. I don't look at it as a step that means we're going to jump off the cliff or anything. And I really appreciate the presentation and look forward to it. We have just a ton of soul searching and evaluation to deal with on the Wolf issue. My background, I always use a silly little analogy that timing is everything. And right now, this is a learning experience, not a timing issue. So thank you, Nate.
Okay. Commissioner Smith?
Yeah, I would be remiss if I didn't just chime in on that part, too, that I appreciated your briefing, and it was educational. And that's what I saw this being, in seconding Commissioner Carpenter's statement that this is an ongoing process, and it will be an ongoing process, but the learning curve is steep, and I hate to see entrenchment at any point supersede the knowledge curve. So this is part of the knowledge curve, helping that part out. So thank you.
Dr. Anderson, you want to...
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, this has been interesting to listen to. It was, frankly, pretty interesting to go through and look at what the options are and think of, well, what options could we provide you that would get you to this point if you wanted to make start down that road or at least have that tool. So we will be sure, and we will get you the information that was presented today. We will not plan, unless otherwise instructed, to provide you any additional information between now and the next time we meet on this particular topic. We will continue to be as aggressive as we can in terms of the implementation steps for our plan as we go forward. And I think the other thing that we talked about when you made this decision, adopted the plan, was we need to be adaptive. We need to be prepared to be adaptive. Let's not be afraid to react. I think we can expect the unexpected. And we are going to learn as we go. We ran into a situation just this last week in terms of working with a livestock operator who had gone to every measure possible to ensure the safety of his livestock. And we were at the point where we felt that it was appropriate to offer him a Cotton Act permit under certain terms and conditions. When we looked at the explicit language of the plan, it really, you could interpret it that didn't meet the threshold that would allow me to do that. But we reached out, we talked to the environmental community, we talked to livestock operators, we talked to the Cattlemen's Association up in the area where the individual is. Everybody agreed that it was the right thing to do, to offer that Cotton Act permit, even though it didn't meet the letter, which is to say we didn't have a documented depredation in the area that is a prerequisite of issuing a Cotton Act permit. But we did it anyway. But we had the right communication with everybody concerned. We knew it was the right thing to do. It's an example of being adaptive, of keeping everybody on board and informed as we move forward. And so we're going to continue to exercise within reason our ability to be adaptive to new circumstances as we experience the implementation of the plan. So I appreciate the conversation. It was informative to me to look at what this might take, and we'll look forward to having your review in a more comprehensive way when you get the material. And if we need to have further conversations about this topic, that's great.
Great. Thank you. Very good conversation. Thank you, Nate.